PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, fellow golfers, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is my incredibly good, likely best friend, James Miles. J-Man, how are you, my buddy?
I'm good, dude. How are you?
I am surprisingly well, considering it. The tides have turned here in the Midwest. It is cooling aggressively. Mm-hmm. I heard something about the clocks being turned back, which I might grab a some sort of large poster board and start writing somewhere to say, don't do that to me. But it sounds like my tee times, unless they're at 1 o'clock, will not be finished. I want to go straight into something we started talking about earlier this year, and it was your goal for, I believe, 250 rounds on the season. Mm-hmm. Now, if you hit that, I think my number matches yours, with the exception of I remove the leading two. Did you nail it? Is it done?
I as of Monday, I'm at 251.
You absolute maniac. Is there any truth to the rumor that you're moving to Kentucky to encourage me to play more golf?
I hope so. I need to get the boss lady to let me move. I'm tired of this state. I want out.
I've heard the internet is exceptional in Oklahoma. It's very consistent as well.
If by consistent, you mean absolutely terrible. Yes.
Yeah. Long story short, my friend James here, we've been trying to record this for, I believe, 3 nights now. Mm-hmm. And tornado season was not very polite to the hyper powered internet over there, which leads him to drink, which leads me to drink. We're recording on a Wednesday evening. The Kraken is in hand. It should be a fun show. James, there's something that's eating at my soul that I really need to get off my chest. Are you cool with me just kind of ranting here for a little bit?
I would expect nothing less. I'm prepared.
Wow. What are you trying to say?
I'm saying it's your show. You steer it the way you want, man.
All right. Well, here's the deal. Okay. I always look at the game of golf from an every person perspective. I don't look at it from mine or something narrow windowed. I try and consider all golfers when I think about what's best for the game. That includes the distance conversation. That includes the quality of clubs conversation. That includes the ridiculous banning of belly putters conversation for those who have bad backs. One of the things that I've always truly enjoyed, James, is the Tee It Forward initiative that they came up with a while back. It was heavily touted for a while, asking golfers to, I don't want to say swallow their pride, but more or less play in a window that makes sure they have a ton of fun. And that means that if they're familiar with how far they hit the ball, they should play a set of tees that suits that distance. I'm sure you're very familiar with it, and I'm sure the conversations that we've had together have been very fruitful. Are you a fan of Tee It Forward to begin with, before we really go too far here?
I'm a fan of any concept that encourages people to play the game to where they're going to have the most enjoyment out of it. That's, to me, you know me, that's the biggest thing above all else. Is, and if you know, that could be really, really short tees, that's fine, but play where you feel comfortable, because that's where you're always going to end up having the most fun.
So I share that perspective, and I know you've played some pretty long courses lately. And probably wouldn't mind doing it, because you've kind of checked off a few big boys on your list locally there. But it seems like most of the time we're very comfortable playing with either where the group wants to play or allowing golfers to go up and play at a tee they're very comfortable with. Have you ever been in a situation where you were either shamed into playing a set of tees or your group shamed someone into moving back with you?
I've been in both. And the first time that I got to play Oaktree National was kind of that way. I did not want to play the tips and everybody else did. And you're kind of in that moment, but that's a special course. So it's kind of one of those things, you just do it. I have been on the other end of things where there was a gentleman that plays with us a fair bit that should be playing the set in front of us. But because of some, and it was almost unspoken peer pressure, just because everybody else is standing back on the tee box behind him, he started playing it, and he still does that to this day, and it drives me nuts. So when he and I play alone, I will actually play the forward tee to make him play the tee that he's more comfortable on.
Really? Yeah. I've been the kind of guy, I play chameleon out there. I think there is a way to enjoy golf from a lot of distances. And I don't mean 5,000 for me, but I certainly mean, you know, anywhere from, I would say probably 63 to 6,900 is pretty fun for me. And at least at my golf course, I find that there's enough of variety there by changing what's in my hand off the tee. It's not just like a bomb and gouge. It's not that style of golf course. You play to a number and then you play to the next number. It's pretty interesting how it changes as well. And we actually had a thread on THP that came up this week, I believe, asking, would you shoot better from a tee closer up? And I can think of at least two holes right off the top of my head that I hate at my golf course from the tees forward, because it's just a different angle.
Yep.
I've played there for so long. It just gets in my head and I do something really dumb, despite the fact that I've got a shorter club in my hands, which should mean it's a better thing for me, but I don't get that. I do you agree that you can have fun pretty much anywhere as long as it's, let's say, fairness? If your wheelhouse is 6,600, you can go up to 60 or go down to 61 and then go back to 7,000 and still have a good time.
Yeah, it may be quasi polarizing with it all. I don't know. People take it the wrong way. I think it has a lot to do with your golf IQ. Like, you and I can go play a course and play at 6,100 and know I don't need to bang driver just because I can. And I'm probably going to have more fun kind of picking things apart, while whoever I'm playing with, if I am playing with the group, they can play their game normally. And there's no shame in any of that. But that's kind of the catch to me is where is your understanding of the golf course and what the golf course is giving you. I, like you mentioned at the O, I can think of a couple holes that from forward tees would not be enjoyable. I've got a couple that it completely shuts off angles, and not in a good way, not like cut the corner angles, but like normal angles. So it's an interesting thing.
Well, I put this all together and I wanted to sort of establish this perspective, because there's something floating around. It's an image that we've seen. I saw it on social media. I saw it again on the THP community, where people are actually kind of happy about it. And I don't know why. And this is an image that says recommended tees by score. And this is put on the first tee of a golf course, I'm assuming. And it says, if you shoot 80 or under, you play the back tees. And then it progressively changes from there. So white's 81 to 90, gold's 91 to 100, and red is 100 plus. I think that is so short-sighted from a management perspective. Now, I will make one concession. I think it is more fun for people to play closer up. I think the chances of potentially playing better are there as long as they learn course management. But I don't think this is a catch-all. I think telling a guy who plays the correct set of tees and shoots in the 70s that he must move back to the back set of tees, he or she move back to the back set of tees, is ridiculous. I am so invested in tee it forward that I look at signs like this and say, you are doing a disservice to the people who come out here and play, because you're eliminating the potential for them to have fun, especially when one of their buddies takes the sign way too seriously and says, I'm a 15 and you're a 5. You got to go way back there, bud.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the golf in a nutshell, Donald. And a lot of things that we've talked about over the years, though, right? We have an extremes problem. People want to take things to extremes. Like, I'm like you. I see merit in parts of it, but it's to the extreme. Like, I play with some older gentlemen here that are in their 70s that don't hit the ball very far, but they go out and shoot a score because they consistently know where it all is. Now, you put them at the back tees, there's no chance. Like, what? Just because he can shoot 77, you're going to move him back whenever he's 72 years old, 75 years old? That's the thing. You can't create these hard and fast rules like that. It has to be a bigger picture. That's why I like tee it forward. To me, tee it forward kept it simple. It was a big picture. The focus was on enjoyment, and there was never any, you have to do this. Like, that's where you start to polarize people. I was kind of surprised to see on the forum, especially, how many people were like, yeah, this is a great idea. That really did surprise me.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. It seems like a very fair thing to do, to allow people who are weaker in the handicap perspective or average score to move forward. I think that's a very kind thing to offer. But I also think there's a lot more depth to the scoring perspective. And you're, once again, it circles back to, are you considering every type of golfer? Are you considering every age of golfer? Are you considering why this guy's a 20 handicap and why he hits it 300 down the middle, but then, you know, once three, five times around, it is blasted into another stratosphere, maybe over a house or two, because he's not going to stop pulling driver just because you've moved him forward.
Nope.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's that, probably going to make him hit driver more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's only, you know, three whatever to the hole. I may as well try and hit those dudes putting for bogey up there. You know that? I don't know. I think this intent to oversimplify from a course perspective, and the one concession I will make is that I understand that a lot of people aren't particularly familiar with how far they hit the ball. Yeah. I struggle with it because there are so many distance features on a golf course, and there are so many distance measuring tools now in the game between rangefinders, GPS, tracking software like Arcos or ShotScope. I mean, there are so many versions of it that I would have a hard time finding a ton of golfers, at least where I play, that have no idea. Like, yeah, do you hit the ball 220 or do you hit it 280? Yeah. I think the pretty much people are going to know what that number is.
Well, and it kind of comes back to where you play, right? And who you're with. Like, it drives me insane with my high school kids when I ask them, okay, what's your number? And they tell me 143. And I say, what's your club? I don't know. Well, what do you mean you don't know? But that's kind of a more specialized mindset. It's kind of like your club at the O. It is like, that is a golf course. So you get golfers that understand the game. Not everybody. Some are just members and they want to go play and everything else. You're going to catch those, but you get into some of these other areas and places, some of the munis out there where guys just want to go hit balls. That's why I put way more emphasis on getting people to play. I don't want to say proper tees because that varies person to person, but better tees for pace, better tees for enjoyment comes onto the courses. And the course is taking the time to know what kind of a layout they have and trying to help convey to people that are coming out there to play. Now, is there an easy solution for that? Of course not. There's no easy solutions in any of this. But to me, more onus falls there because where you're at and who you're around, it definitely changes the whole perception.
I have an idea. And I got to know, what are your thoughts on a breakfast ball? Are you pretty okay with it?
As in a group of guys going out and hitting a breakfast ball?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't bother me.
So if a golf course wants to make a suggestion and it's based on distance and people aren't familiar, what if they said, you guys, we don't have a range here, so we can't help you. But on the first tee, you're allowed to take a breakfast ball, hit your first ball from this tee box here. Where it lands based on the stakes that are out there that we've set up for you is where you should play the golf course.
I don't dislike that at all. I mean, now you have to be able to hit the grid with one of your two balls.
Well, you have an idea.
I understand what you're saying. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's giving it, that way the course is kind of setting some type of perception based on what they know their layout to be.
Yeah.
I don't dislike that at all. To me, that makes more sense than saying you broke 80, you have to play the back tees.
Yeah. Well, I always find it really interesting that we get so focused on handicaps, but handicaps make almost zero consideration to how far a golfer hits the ball. Like, to not have that element in play when it's such a significant disadvantage or advantage for someone, to me, is insane. But I mean, it just goes full circle on how stupid the handicap system is. And it's just another opportunity for me to rag on it because I just checked my index today again and I'm still soft cap, so what the hell do I care?
still
soft cap, buddy. Yep.
Holy cow.
I should be a 2.7. I'm currently a 1.2. thank you, Jin. I am a liar and a sandbagger.
That a boy.
With now a vanity cap. Thank you. Anywho, yeah, we won't hang too hard on that. I just thought it was a really weird conversation because I don't know if it's a lack of understanding or if it's just an idea that maybe it might help. And I certainly respect that. I've done this going to the Carolinas plenty, where we go with a wide variety of guys who hit the ball a wide variety of distances, who shoot a wide variety of scores. And there have been weeks where I've gone down there and I've been relegated to the back tees because we're trying to play a friendly game and they don't want me to have a significant advantage. And it's like, you know what? That's fine, guys, but not all these courses are the same distance from the back tees, and you guys need to chill out on a couple of them because it's getting pretty gnarly back here. You know that I appreciate what they're trying to do. I just don't like the execution.
I
would love to see some version of a distance metric to even allow someone to modify where they play after the first hole or after the first two holes, or provide a driving range where you get two balls before you tee off, even if you choose to not pay for range balls. And the closest or best version of your drive is where you dictate where you play that day.
Yeah. And I also think another one, and you and I've talked about it in the past, I think if more courses would consider having some split tees that they have designed and set up, I think you now not only catch a wider range for people to play, you put to bed some of the ego stuff that goes on with what tee you're playing, because there is a lot of ego stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that don't want to play a certain number from a par four or par five, but because it's too short, but then you put them on a 205 yard par three and they're like, oh hell no.
Are you talking, so, did you research my golf course before you got on this podcast today or what?
I've been there. I've been there a couple times.
Yeah. I mean, we have a set of tees. Our tournament tees are 6,600 yards and our combo tees are right in between that and the 6,100 yard tees. It's perfect. I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about. And I think a lot of golf courses are establishing that, which is great because it's not hard to, it's not hard to put a number on. Now I will say, it's a three stroke swing for me as a 1.2 going from the golds to the green golds. It's pretty interesting. Just from a handicap perspective, but I love it because I'm already only putting in half my score anyway, and I don't score that much better. So whatever.
Well, there.
Yeah. By the way, you coming into golf this weekend or what?
No, I wish. I wish.
So that was my little tirade for the week. I hope everyone enjoyed it, and I would love to get some perspectives. We will definitely be talking about this on the THP community, in the forums. There's always a thread that's created for the off course episode of the week. We will absolutely be talking about that. But there's one big reason why I brought you on today, James. Do you know what it is?
Looking snazzy on the golf course.
Yeah, there's a big part. So we have not focused on apparel on off course yet. I don't think we've sort of grazed it, but we haven't really isolated conversations into it. Now I know not only are you a big fan of new golf apparel, you seem to acquire some of it, but you also, dress, you know, high school students every year, being that you're a golf coach and get to dictate what features you get to have them wear. So I would say you're fairly in tune with the new looks that are out there. Is that reasonable to say?
I think that's fair, because if I don't dress them good, then they sure as heck aren't going to do it themselves.
Well, I want to just kickstart it with, if every year, and so I'm at the end of my season more or less. If I get out now, it's kind of a bonus. You seem to play a lot more than I do, being that you're in Oklahoma, but it's kind of hit or miss, not to the same level. But we're both kind of looking at this point, like, what are we doing in 2022? How are we going to look in 2022? When do you start kicking up your apparel purchasing for the following year? And what is like the primary thing you need to get out of the way first?
It's usually January-ish. Once we find out what a lot of the apparel companies are dropping, that's whenever I start to try to kind of hone in, not only for mine, but my kid's season starts in March to April. So that January window gives us enough time with a lot of the new releases to kind of pick in that. And that's whenever I start to kind of start to cherry pick some of the stuff that I want. I'm a big early focus on what am I going to put on my feet this year, because I usually do change. I don't have a whole lot of holdover on golf spikes because I play so stinking much, but I have been known to hoard some if I like some very much, Nike Premieres. Now, beyond that, for me, it's polos. I like polos. I like shoes. I like socks.
Yeah. Well, you were recently over in Vegas with the THP crew playing in the Morgan Cup. And I believe one of the featured discussions on the forum was the spicy socks you were wearing each day. So, you know, I don't quite have that that game yet. And maybe it's because I'm so worried about the lack of tan I would get if I continue to raise up my leg, because I don't see the sun any other time. So or whatever it may be. But yeah, let's feature shoes for a little bit. There are, I would say there's been a pretty reasonable swing in who is featured most in conversations right now. I know Quator came in in a pretty big way with a couple of their shoes. Now, I haven't spent a lot of time on the golf course. I wear their wild cards almost every time I go to the THP mm-hmm. Tech Studio because they're so easy to use. Are you familiar with Quader at all?
Yeah, I've got a pair of wild cards that I have relegated to off course wear mostly.
Okay.
I don't care for what they do on course all that much, but I'll wear them around. I'll wear them on the putting green with the kids and stuff, and I wear them around town.
It's and more then like I, a like an evening nine yeah, kind of
no,
shoe, right?
That, yeah. Which is what I like because yeah. everything for me has got to be versatile, with mm-hmm. the exception of if I'm going to wear a true spike, that kind of changes things. Okay. I tried a couple of their other pairs. My problem is their sizing stops at 13. and they're well it's like a to me it's like a 13 and a half. Okay. So they kind of work for me. They work well off course, but on course they're a little bit snug because I obviously have skis for feet with 14s, but
yeah, it's one of those things where I kind of got wrapped up in the tour premieres of a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and unusually I focused on a pair of shoes for the entire season, which was great. And then I bought a pair of the Adidas Code Chaos in the fall. And they just ended up being a defer to next year mm-hmm. shoe, which never left. And then I found, and I think everyone who followed knows that I have an unbelievable affinity for anything that has Arnold Palmer's umbrella logo on it. So I got a pair of the ProDap Deltas. I believe they're called ProDap. The Deltas, mm-hmm. anyway, from this year, which are spectacular. I haven't broken them in yet that much. I've played quite a few rounds out of the cart with them, but never really walked. You're a Delta guy. I know yep. you have at least a pair or two. What are your thoughts on Puma? Maybe we just feature a couple companies here and let me know, because Puma has had a little bit of a roller coaster ride. I was a huge Biofusion guy. Huge. Same. You could not convince me that there was a better shoe than Biofusion. It got a little rocky there for a bit. A couple spike issues, a couple waterproofing issues. Yep. But now they have Delta, which seems to be incredible. Have you gone through that full depth of lineup? And would you say Delta is their featured shoe?
So I loved the Bios. That's whenever Puma kind of broke in on me. The Spikeless for me was a classroom shoe. I actually wore it whenever I taught. Then I wore it right to the golf course. The ones that had the rubber pods on the bottom, because it worked well for both. Kids made fun of me, but I didn't care. They were comfortable. and I really enjoyed them. And I actually, that was the point in golf where I didn't wear spikes at all, ever. They kind of transitioned me to Spikeless, which, I mean, for me, as hard as I swing on a lot of stuff, I always thought I had to have spikes, and that kind of fixed it. So I kind of stuck with Puma, got to Ignites, and I didn't have the greatest experience with the Ignites for a few reasons. Some of the other stuff, some of the other pairs, there were some waterproof issues with the pods. I had some that kind of failed on me a little bit, which were replaced, which was cool. But even then, I was kind of hesitant, and I moved away from Puma. Until this year, I got some Deltas, and I got some spicy Deltas.
Some very spicy.
They are Deltas. Spicy Deltas, and I love them, dude. I walk in them now. I walked in them Monday. Okay. It's the first spike I've walked in really, really comfortably in a long time. I mean, the premieres were good for me like that. They were not bad, but these are more comfortable, especially as they have broken in, which is funny for you to mention that. These have honestly broken in. It's been a while since I've had a shoe like that.
It's interesting because I thought Tour Premier, regardless of whether it was sort of a big step away from the traditional golf shoe presentation, I think it was unique enough that it was kind of okay for me, but it also became an unbelievably comfortable experience. And I think Nike had that going for a long time. Now, I know you have some of their new shoes. Mm-hmm. It's killing me. I can't think of the names of them. Save me here.
I'm trying.
You're looking them up, which is great.
Can't remember the name right now.
They were
React Infinities.
The Infinities.
No, the Air Zoom Infinities. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's like a tour version or a pro version.
Everything's Infinity, Dan.
What was interesting was Nike went to a weird direction, because I always thought, and this was back in the day, they had some of the most comfortable shoes. And then they got like super tight and narrow, which was okay in 14 apparently, but not in standard Dan size to the point where I actually had to return a set, which I was bummed about because they looked amazing. Now, they've obviously improved that sizing with the wide version and with the 2021 version. You have some pretty killer looking ones. Would you say that if the deltas are one, then your Nikes would be 1A, or are they like a close B or C?
You know, I think they're more of a B or C. So it's the Air Zoom Infinity Tour is what we were. It took me a second.
No wonder we couldn't figure
well,
it out.
Well, and not only that, it's Air Zoom Infinity Tour NRG. Yeah. Okay. But I have the tie-dyed ones because, of course, I have the tie-dyed ones because I'm spicy.
Yeah.
no, but they're good, but they switched to that big spike pattern on the bottom, which was it took some getting used to, especially walking. But they're comfortable. You know, the ones that have honestly snuck in lately. And when we went to South Carolina, I tried some on for the first time in forever. FootJoy has come around for me.
Really?
I used to immediately cast aside FootJoy because they all look the same and they all look like, I'm going to get chastised for this, but old guy shoes. They did. And I don't wear, now let me rephrase that. I don't wear traditional saddle style shoes either. Like, that's not my bag. I've got some kids that wear them and they look great for the guys that can pull them off. JT and those guys that can pull them off, they look fantastic.
Thinking of JT immediately,
in 14s, I cannot pull those off. They look like Bozo the Clown shoes. So I need something that's kind of more on that athletic scene. And we tried them. I tried them whenever we, it's not like we went and tried shoes together. Hey, Dan, try this.
We did. He's lying. We did.
We may have. But I tried them on and I've tried them since. And I've gotten really close at my home course to ordering a pair. So
interesting.
They fit me more like I want things to, more like I'm getting out of the deltas.
Okay.
Which the deltas have really surprised me though, because I didn't expect that type of a more traditional looking shoe at times, not with the pattern I have on mine, obviously, but the way the leather is and the way the look is, I didn't expect me to enjoy that, but I have.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it seems like some of these companies are more or less featuring a certain style of shoe. I mean, we had some unbelievable discussions last year about squares and the features that truly benefit them. And there are people who have flatter feet, which I do not have, which scream praise for squares, which is super interesting. I've been in between Puma and Adidas and Nike for so many years that I feel genuinely like a shoe free agent for this coming year. It's weird, man. And I really like the deltas. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things, though, where I spent good money making sure Arnie's umbrella is on there. So I'm definitely going to behave with them.
Yeah.
And I want like a shoe that I can kick around in the mud. Mm-hmm. But I really feel like a free agent shoe guy for 2022. And I'm excited to hear what people have to say, who are listening in, what shoe they swear by. The one thing that I'm sort of wrapping my head around now is, and I still can't really understand it, even though I bought into it, James, is why is every shoe manufacturer making a product that can't kick dirt? You know what I mean? Like, why is there so much, what's the word? Flyknit, I guess, would be like the Nike version of it.
Yeah, you know,
it's a knitted material that gets everything really fast. Prime blue. I had a pair of shoes that turned brown almost instantly that were white. I should have seen that coming. But it seems like even FootJoy's got an example now. They look incredible, but you gotta wonder after one not great round out there on a dewy morning with a little bit of mud, and that shoe's gonna look like it's a year old.
It is interesting, especially from like, that's something I face a lot. I like white shoes because I mean, again, we come back to shoe size, but they look better on my feet than black shoes do or anything else. But I mean, that was the Nikes when they made their switch. I have to clean them after every single round to keep them halfway presentable because they want to get dirty and they want to get a little yellow. Mm-hmm. I've found the more leather there is, the less I have to deal with that. And I think that's why the Deltas moving back to that very significant leather portion has made it a little bit easier because they're white, but they wipe way easier. Whereas anything with that knit, though it breathes, depending on where you play. And here, it's not even so much the dewy rounds in the morning for me. It's the midday rounds when it's just dust everywhere.
Just dust, sure.
Yeah.
So you're fighting all the dust in the Oklahoma with tornadoes in the back and, you know, running away from that. It's pretty scary, man.
Living the dream, baby. Yeah. Living the dream.
Well, let's slide into polos a bit because whether intentional or not, you've opened my eyes a bit this year to polo variety. And let's paint a picture for the folks at home. I've been, up until probably 2 years ago, an Under Armour one color polo guy. They fit so well. They stretch so nice.
Boring.
A really weird frame. And you could buy them for $20 at the clearance center outlet mall. I would go, and I had a closet of 40 of them. The only thing that changed is the color. And, you know, it's kind of fun because I got to experience this year with Matt Gray, who's doing some unbelievable stuff. I actually just picked up, we haven't talked about it, I picked up their Joshua polo, which
good stuff.
That might be my favorite now. I had one I was pretty locked into. But I also experienced a little bit of straight down, which has an unbelievably soft, light material, but like a really
the collars are amazing.
Collar.
Yeah.
Depending on which ones you buy, it seems like there's been a little bit of consistency change there, but I don't know enough about the new models. Maybe I got an older one. I got a cool looking one, James, that has like buffaloes and just seemed like a different feature. But anyways, so, you know, I got to experience like the higher end stuff. You've been inundated with that. You've been familiarized with that because of the boys playing. Mm-hmm. Are there other brands that people should be looking out for if they want a featured high quality polo outside of like a matte gray or a straight down? I know my course handles Johnny O, which is an interesting cut, I'll say.
It's I like Johnny O. I've got one from whenever I went out and played in Branson. And I enjoy it. It's kind of a tweener cut to me. Which I have, I don't know. I'm one that tends to, I don't want a European cut, but I don't want a traditional blah athletic cut either. It's kind of got to be that in-between range. It's why Matt's always been good for me. It's a similar cut to Travis Matthew, which it should be.
Like
it
a
should
loose,
be, yeah, yeah.
Like a loose European cut is what you're trying to say.
Which it tapers better to the way I want it to, a loose European cut. Good gosh. We're just making things up on the fly. but no, it kind of depends on, do you like bright or not?
Yeah.
I mean, because like for me, one that I recently got two polos from is Bad Birdie. And I don't know if you've seen any of the Bad Birdie stuff.
No.
It is bright, dude. And I mean, huge patterns, bigger patterns than I normally wear off of stuff.
Okay.
But the tech material is really good. Home,
I think James' two favorite colors right now are hot pink and like a teal blue, just so we're clear.
And if I can combine them, it's even better. But I mean, with bright patterns, the key is there's so many people with good tech material now. There, once upon a time, the only good tech material out there was Nike. And then Adidas eventually caught them. And then you kind of set in there with Under Armour. Yeah. But now there's so many people that are doing these blends of stuff that it works really well. I love Matter from Puma. If you have not looked at Puma's polos because of the past and the sizing issues that they did have initially, which were really big sizing, it reminded me a lot of FootJoy at times. You should look at them again. Cloudspun may be the most miracle fabric on the planet.
Yeah. I think as much as I want to dial into some more obscure brands, I want to cycle back to Puma because we haven't talked a lot about their apparel. I'll be honest with you, James, I've been a big Cloudspun guy. I've not been quiet about it at all.
No.
Which is kind of how things go. But the one beef I would always have with them is that their cut just didn't suit me. Mm-hmm. You know, I wear medium, I guess. And it's just a little baggy for me because I've worn the same style of cut that Under Armour somewhat athletic cut. And not that I'm calling myself an athlete, let's be clear here, but I've always, always, always adored Puma's quarter zips. And this specifically this year, they did an Arnold Palmer release. Mm-hmm. I know you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I actually just got two of them, like a whitish off blue. It's like a very, very light tinge of blue, of course. And then like they call it, I think, a Legion blue.
Yeah.
And they are the best quarter zips I will ever own in my life. I'm stamping that right now.
That's impressive. Do they have, so my question for you, do they have the elastic band at the bottom of them?
They have a great band at the bottom. It is like
an, you know what, the drawstring?
It's like the accordion style but it's got like some solid grip to it.
Because you know what I'm talking about with the, with their other cloud spun quarter zips, they have this like, it's almost, it's an elastic band at the bottom of it that you can, you can cinch at the side.
No, it's not like that at all.
Oh, see, that's, this isn't good for my wallet. but that's really my, that's been my only knock about their quarter zips, and for them to have that, because the cut is super good.
So they had the two tones last year, which I think I bought four of and it's, I didn't love the two tone style, the one color at the top, one color at the bottom kind of thing. But I love Cloudspun so much that I basically fully invested my, you know, off season apparel in them. They had the crew net, which is one color, and then they circle back with this Arnold Palmer collection, which is unbelievable. It's kind of a high neck quarter zip with like a, it feels like a metal zipper, which is unbelievably nice. You've got the,
that's kind of reminiscent of the Bobby Jones pullovers.
Yeah. I'm basically,
I'm
basically just going to sit here and talk about it until you, you know, redirect me elsewhere, but long story short, dude, it's an incredible shirt. I got on FaceTime with my dad and I don't think he even let me say anything. He was just like, what are you wearing? So I guess he wants some for Christmas or something. I don't really know what was going on there. Is there a quarter zip that that you feature more than others?
Depends on the time of the year. I put my kids in Cloudspun last year for the first time. For a lighter quarter zip, I really like matte gray. I'm a big matte fan with the way that their cut is on everything. It kind of fits in that tweener that I like. I'm really picky when it comes to quarter zips, because they tend to get boxier than anything. And you just look like a, I mean, it looks like you're wearing a hefty bag at times, because everything underneath your armpits just hangs. I'm making these motions to the camera and nobody can see me right now because they're listening. Well, that's good. But no, I typically have two. I'm a big Travis Matthew pullover guy.
Yeah.
I like the Trav Matt stuff. They fit really well to me, and it's a similar cut. I mean, obviously for what you're going to get with Matt Gray. So,
well, let's take our, I guess this is on topic, off course versions, because we keep featuring companies.
Yeah.
I mean, Trav does so many things so freaking well. We may as well talk about them. They're, I would argue their jackets and vests and maybe even pullovers maybe would rival just about anyone out there. Definitely their outerwear. I have a quarter zip jacket, very light, from them that I will wear until it thins and falls apart on me, because it's so good. And I also really got into their pants this year. I got their Right on Time pants in blue and black. And black's not my color, but I've worn them like, you know what, a dozen times, because I like the trim. I like the way they run. And I've been an Adidas Ultimate guy for so long that I don't even know what's out there. You know, I've just had pants that work, cause I love the stretch waist. And then I put these Right on Time pants on, and the first time I wear them out there, guys who don't compliment me ever, my buddies are like, hey, those are some sweet looking pants. I'm like, who are you? What did you do with my buddy?
Why, know? Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, are you trying to get my head? It's only the second hole. So yeah, I'm big on that, but you know me, I'm a Travis Matthew hat guy. I have like all of their hats and I will continue to buy their hats, cause they're so good.
I think Trav has done, and they don't, they, for whatever reason, actually, I know the reason. Like initially a few years ago, everything was so golf focused with them. All golf conversations ended up with Travis Matthew in them. Right now, you don't see the conversation go that way as much. And I think it's because they were the first ones to become that lifestyle brand. Like Travis, everything now. They're in everything. They appeal to on course, off course, other sports, business apparel, casual, whatever else you want it to be. And that's how I wear all mine. Like I've got some just around town kind of jacket style pullovers that are not golf centric that I adore. And I wear them all the time. I've got button-up shirts, full button-ups that are just dress shirts from Trav that I enjoy.
It's the same thing with their polos, man. I have like go-to outer polos for out on the town kind of thing. Trav's at the top of that list. I don't know what it is about that material. It just really works for me. And they did some of like the plaid style full button-up shirts.
Yep, I've got a couple of those. Yep.
Yeah, I'm watching Nordstrom Rack because I have them there. Like when we get those Black Friday deals, man, I will be all over that, those flannels. Oh my God, Travis Matthews just doing it right.
It's funny to see how those brands have evolved, though, but it kind of goes with how golf's evolved, right? I mean, you see Puma doing it now. A lot of Puma stuff is on course, off course, and it's really fun to see because to me, it means my closet becomes more versatile, which is what I want.
So let's go the other way for like 2 minutes and say, okay, let's do like the what the hell were they thinking section. Nike. Of the
sorry, I was too fast.
Podcast. What the hell was Nike thinking with like the last, I don't care how many years worth of apparel? I'm not trying to gaslight someone. I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings, but as a guy who golfs and lives in golf and plays golf regularly, I look at some of the apparel they make. And I think number one, what is this quality? Because they've gone massively downhill by comparison to others. They haven't improved. They've regressed.
Definitely.
What is this presentation? Like, you'd argue some of them look more like something you put on a concept car before you even brought it to market, so people couldn't figure out what it was. And third, who are they marketing to? I don't understand it.
They're marketing to 127-pound, 6-foot models. I don't know. it blows my mind, and though, shoes. Because and shoes. But it, seriously, like at least me, I'm not going to speak for you, but like I grew up on Nike. Like I was in the middle of that generation, everything Nike. Nike did.
It was the Tiger era, right? Everyone wore Nike.
Yeah, everyone wore Nike. And not only that, like some of the first good, when I first got into golf, the first good polos I bought myself were Nike because the quality was outstanding, especially in the Tiger Woods stuff.
Yeah.
It was outstanding. There was hardly anything close to it. Then Adidas got close for a little while. And then both have kind of fallen off. Like, I'm not going to let Adidas off the hook here either, because I think they've just, I think they've gone extremely bland. Whereas Nike has tried to do stuff that I just don't understand. When you're putting AstroTurf on shoes, which I would wear them, but when you're putting, you remember Brooks's Nike hat with the Nike that's like vertical.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff going on and the cuts and the way the arms are cut into them, it's like,
that's so weird.
It's bad. And I've tried some on and it's the most non-flattering thing ever. And they just don't feel like they're going to last.
I've already made the concession that I purchased apparel based on the material over the presentation. Are you the same kind of way? Is it a deal breaker on presentation or material?
Material first. Material has the heaviest weight for me because there's just some stuff that I can't get over. Like the fact that some companies are still producing true cotton apparel in golf right now, it blows my mind, especially when something like Cloudspun exists.
I was going to say, what about Voodoo Cotton, which is sorcery that's Cloudspun.
I mean, that's kind of the where I was taking it. Like the fact that some of these hybrid materials exist and do it better. Like, why are you still living in that age and producing these shirts? But apparently somebody's buying them. I don't know. Not me.
What do you think about some of these crossover brands that are getting more featured on Facebook and, you know, those kind of places like Roback or very high priced materials that present into the golf world, but also are on that upper echelon? I wouldn't say like a Galvin Green, because they're just super expensive because of the quality, but
like a Roback and a Vineyard Vines and some.
Yeah,
of those.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. No, I think it makes sense. I think they are appealing to a segment that honestly, I think Nike used to. Remember, Nike used to do a lot of stripes.
Yeah,
a lot of horizontal stripes, a lot of the kind of those softer colors, those not pastels quite, but a lot kind of in that range. I think the Robacks of the world, I think the Vineyard Vines of those, that they're kind of hitting those. I think it works for them. I think they also appeal to the college age group a lot on like off course as well. So you kind of get that bleed over, which you almost have to have right now.
Okay. Is there anything that's a current trend that you will not concede? You will not do?
No, I put my kids in blade collars this year, dude.
That doesn't count. That's not a golf shirt.
Oh,
that's
you were trying to get away from it. I had to bring it up.
So joggers, would you ever wear joggers on the golf course?
No. There's probably not enough money in the world to make me wear joggers.
I would do it 100%. You get me a good pair of joggers, I'll do it. And I have a pair of joggers here.
There's no such thing as a good pair of joggers.
I made the mistake of buying Adidas ones and they were I hope I make
everybody mad. Joggers are not good.
Well, yeah, it's James.
That's JMan_THP.
Yeah, I would say go chase him on Twitter, but I'm on a bit of a Twitter hiatus. So, or vacation. I don't know what to call it. Anyways, needlepoint belts.
I've not found one that I enjoy. And I think it's because they're so narrow.
Yeah.
I like a wider belt. Like okay. that's my biggest thing is I wear a lot of mission belts because I can get the wider strap off of them and I can make them match my socks, my ferrules, whatever else you want to match. But I think that's my only thing with the needle points is because I thought about this after the last conversation when you got your transfusion when you were so excited and I was like, and I think that's why. I think it's just they're so narrow. I need to get one and try it and wear it around, but I don't know. It's kind of so-so. I'd wear one. Maybe. Yeah,
you want one for Christmas? I got you. What about mock turtlenecks?
Mock turtlenecks are different than blade collars. Okay. I'm making sure we're establishing this right now. You got quiet, but I'm establishing this.
Oh yeah,
we're blade talking like the tiger. We're talking about like the Tiger Woods mock turtleneck.
Well, the good example is Brooks Koepka just wore one. So whatever tournament. Looking like a baboon.
I have worn one. One of my last years of coaching football, the entire coaching staff wore mock turtlenecks. And this was like 260 pound me. So yeah. It was not an attractive look. I can't do them on course. No.
No.
It looks good on like muscle bound guys, whatever.
Okay. How about the visor?
Man, I used to rock a visor hardcore for a long time, but I can't do it anymore. When my head was shaved, it worked. I definitely can't do high crowns. High crowns look terrible on me.
How about the flattest of flat bills?
It's got to have a little curve. The one I got on right now from Puba's got a little curve. I can't do straight flat bill.
Chasing a little bit. How about fancy gloves, colored gloves?
I like colored gloves. I have a lot of Asher stuff. I like colored gloves a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Asher for rocking, hooking us up this year. Having an awesome collab with THP. I have Asher gloves for days now.
I do too.
because I had to. Those things are absolutely sick. Go check them out. They have some super cool styles over there. I want to keep going, man, because there's so much we could talk about. But I think where we are is probably good for the week. Let's have you back on soon.
Yeah.
I want to talk about matching socks to ferrules because we didn't get a chance to do
it.
And there's got to be lots more. We can dive into the joggers versus pants discussion. I know you actually take pants versus shorts on tour very seriously. So let's dive into that next time as well. What do you think?
I will go scorched earth. I'm ready.
All right. Do you have any questions for me today, buddy?
Have you figured out your swing weights yet?
No, I have not. So I need to, long story short, I have an unbelievable set of irons in play right now with the Mizuno 921s, the JPX forged. And the swing weight is way off. So I'm going to do some, it might be tonight. I might do some surgery tonight and then go hang out with the local golf store and say, I don't want you to build my clubs. I just want you to tell me what they are. Because we need to get from C6 to D3, and I'm not really sure how we're going to get there. But we are changing shafts. I'm going back to recoil, James. I have a sick set of customs. They've got to go in there.
They will be a fun one-week experiment for you.
Yeah, whatever. What else you got for me, buddy? Is that it?
That's all I got, brother.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for coming on. I'm super pumped you drank a transfusion while I drank some rum tonight. I love chatting apparel with you, buddy. I know you're super into it with your boys, golf and girls golf team. So obviously we'll be looking forward to some more feedback from you here closing in on the new year.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me on. It's always fun.
Yeah, buddy. Congrats on 250. If you guys are playing golf this weekend, you better make sure you're having fun. I have 3 rounds scheduled. Ideally when he's listening to this, Jeremy, JD Talks, my buddy, will be driving down to play with me this weekend. So 3 rounds scheduled. I'm going to go have a blast. I hope you guys do too. Let me know how you play. We'll be on the THP forums. Join the community. Have some fun. Let's talk some golf. Until next week, play well.
THP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.